Better, smarter, faster. The future of connected healthcare relies on a powerful digital ecosystem and robust neural network to drive better diagnostics, intelligent operations, and seamless care anywhere. Join us as we talk to the experts about transformational roadmaps for this evolving landscape. What's working, what's needed, and how we get there together. Welcome to Healthcare on Air, presented by Verizon. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Healthcare on Air by Verizon. We're picking up this week our conversation with Dr. Naeem and Dr. Briggs Mallinson from UCLA Health. We had a great first episode, and this episode is just as good. So here we go.
So starting with the socioeconomic, you know, higher end, and then how do you give them the same tools, like you said, that equitable access to the right digital tools? I mean, I see more and more, you know, a lot of folks have a smartphone and they will pay for that phone over many, many things. So, I mean, is the phone kind of one of the corner pieces of that activation?
I would definitely say yes.
Yeah.
So our entire world globally, we're digital first and we're definitely mobile first as well.
Yeah.
And we, as you all know, there's numerous studies that have shown that even within our lower income communities in particular, everyone still has a phone. Now, the level of phone that people have is a little different, but that's part of where the innovation comes in. What type of phone that would be accessible to everyone do we create? And do we link, for instance, with the clinical trials, or do we link directly to their physician? So even, for instance, we learned during the pandemic, going back to your comment, Arash, about patient portals, when we were trying to do telehealth, it was predominantly on desktop computers.
Yeah.
Right? Absolutely. You couldn't just access it from your mobile phone, no matter who you were. Well, then, gosh, if people may not have desktop computers that are linked up to whatever the Wi-Fi is directly in their home, how are they receiving access? Now, fortunately, we've changed that over the past few years, but you have to start somewhere. But most importantly, again, it is centering the voice of the people. And we don't do that enough. In medicine, I think, and I would even say technology, makes assumptions for what will work best for other people without asking them directly, what's the best way for us to get in contact with you? What's the best way for us to engage you? Is it your phone? Is it your computer? What other devices can we use? And we have to start doing that if we really want to improve outcomes.
Yeah. We need to stay connected with those patients and continue that relationship that we are establishing with those individuals. And one of the cornerstones of Verizon's focus is the digital inclusion and reducing the barrier to entry so they can access these types of technologies easier. And then the extension of care to rural areas and remote areas, and how do we basically provide that connectivity to those underserved communities.
What have you found are the programs you put in place to, like Ned said, to maintain that engagement with your patient population? Once you get them in, they have the trust, get them into a clinical trial, they have a phone or a tablet. How do you keep that continuity of, you know, keeping that, you know, just more touch points with that patient?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously the individuals that are participating in a clinical trial are very invested in either A, generating knowledge that's going to benefit their community, or the next generation, or maybe even themselves. And so I think, you know, communicating the results of what the clinical trials show is a very important feedback loop that I think is important in that trust building exercise. And, you know, there's been a lot of initiatives to ensure that when a trial is done, the results are reported in a way that's transparent on a national level. I will say the other thing that I think is an important nuance is we oftentimes as physicians are always kind of focused a lot on a particular disease or someone coming in who's sick. But I think healthcare is changing dramatically to wellness and prevention. And when you talk about wellness and prevention, things like a smartphone and other things are critical because a lot of the elements of wellness may be tied to other things that are available in a digital format, exercise routines, content that's available, the ability to get transportation when you need it. It's very transformative in terms of what you can do if you have the right sort of access and mobility that is very important for overall wellness to begin with, both mental health wellness among a variety of other things. And I think the more we shift to trying to be focused on the wellness of our populations, the more we have to invest in these.
Yeah, and it's like, we're going to digital first natives are becoming older, they're getting complex conditions, they need to have, more and more care delivery. I think, so that's what you said, that's probably a great mix or perfect storm of younger generation coming out that are more tech savvy, put more of a focus on gamifying certain systems to really get to where we need to go, which is value-based care for everyone's.
And I'm going to add a little bit, Arash, totally agree with you in terms of where we need to shift and transform to. In order to engage and keep our patients engaged, and I will say even in clinical care, we have to add value to their lives. And so if the various different forms of apps or if the technology is not adding value, and let's really talk about, because I know like Arash was kind of hinting at it, but we have to think beyond just the what is provided from a medical facility and really also start incorporating the social drivers of health. And remember, the social drivers of health are not things that are just like negative. These are all in your health-related social needs. And that may be that you're socially isolated. And so therefore, how can we make sure that people are connecting with others like them, especially as our population ages? That could definitely still be transportation if you don't have access to your own private forms of transportation, or it could be everything from education, as we know, plays a significant role in one's overall health. So really making sure that we are providing what a patient needs in order to be as healthy as possible is where all of technology has to shift. And again, that means that we're putting that person in the middle and making sure we're doing and providing to them what's best for them versus we just dictating what we think is best for them.
Yeah, that I love that point. And it's, will you pay for a smartphone or a tablet to have that piece of technology? What is the value of them utilizing that versus, having to come in so it get very, very sick, come into the ED? Like if you start weighing the pros and cons, I've seen a lot of payers who are sending a device or some kind of a wearable into those patient diabetic populations, just to have that, additional touch points with that community. So I think the economics are kind of shifting that way.
100%. Because if I could save, a certain number of people from coming into the emergency department unnecessarily because of the fact that we have them connected and we can check in on them and ensure that after their discharge, whether it's from the hospital or the ED, that they can actually have direct communication with a provider. That 100% would help out in so many different ways, even if it's texting. Yeah. It doesn't even need to necessarily be, and especially now with AI, even if it's a really strongly vetted clinically
peer-reviewed.
Right, good review, rooted in evidence-based literature. Chatbot. Maybe we can figure something out that way.
But I just want to add to that point that, we're probably in health one of the few sort of industries that feel that we can ask our patients and community to do something, but not make it engaging and entertaining for them to be able to do that. Like adherence is always the biggest issue. Like here at Vive, I'm sure there's so many innovative technologies, but the failure and success of one of them is the adherence of people to whatever that innovation is. And I think to the extent that we can utilize technology to engage people so that they feel like they're managing or more actively involved in their own care or where they want to come back and do more because they're stimulated by, what they're seeing themselves, the more likely it is that we're going to make progress. And, I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. And even in certain populations that have either, language barriers and other things, the technology will help us leapfrog our ability to develop content and to communicate with people in ways that we weren't able to do in the paper and pencil and direct face-to-face thing. And I think that's really where the main opportunity is.
So I thought the audience and we would love to hear about some initiatives. So we'll sneak peek into something you're excited about, project you're working on. Doc, you want to start first?
Yeah, sure. So, obviously I think, the areas that are most exciting are studies that are looking for opportunities to develop digital biomarkers around particular types of diseases. One example is through our cancer center. We just recruited a new investigator, Dr. Sederach, whose focus is on anti-aging senolytic drugs in people that are recovering from chemotherapy and breast cancer. To be able to demonstrate that strategy works and that people are able to maintain their physical performance, regardless of what the intervention is, he needs to track how significant their ability is to meet their activities of daily living and their physical activities. So layered on top of this whole study is a whole wearable sort of biometric data collection process in older, relatively semi-frail patient populations. And so it raises a whole issue of how do you build the infrastructure to be able to do that? And that's just one example, I think, of a variety. There's a lot happening in mental health around depression through a Depression Grand Challenge on can you collect information from mobile devices, whether it's a smartphone or a wearable, through voice, through video, facial expression, that allow you to predict mood, cognition, you know, physical performance. And I think that sort of area is, I think, a very hot area. And there's probably many companies here that are focused in that area. How do you develop a reliable, reproducible digital biomarker? And I think as it relates to our conversation, those digital biomarkers may not be the same in every community, in every lived sort of situation. And so you need to have wide participation to ensure that the algorithms that are being developed are not biased to a particular type of population.
Absolutely.
That's exciting. Exactly. That's why I always like listening to Arash. It's like, oh, you know, a lot of the work that I'm also very excited of and proud of what we've done at UCLA Health is really on the more practical side of clinical care and outcomes, as well as patient experience. And so our health IT teams at UCLA Health are just absolutely amazing. And so through that partnership between health IT and as well as population health, health equity, we have completely revamped our entire electronic health record system in order to not only support research, but also to support our clinical care. And we have done that in numerous different ways. Number one, we have made sure that all of our patients are now able to self-report their identities. And it's not just in big buckets. We actually have it broken down and tailored to our Los Angeles population across all identities, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, you name it, faith. We have it all. And what that actually has allowed us to do is build highly sophisticated dashboards so we can drill into any clinical disease process. We can drill into patient experience of a certain group, and we can see where our areas of inequities are and then dive into that space. Versus just saying, like, we're just going to throw spaghetti at the wall and try to see what sticks. And then one of the next things that we're doing right now is we're deep right now in our social driver screening. But not just screening for various different health-related social needs, but actually doing something about it. So now that we actually have various different partnerships with different community-based organizations, we do now universal screening for social needs. When we identify a need, we are now creating that closed-loop referral system so we can say, gosh, this person or this family is experiencing food insecurity. Well, guess what? We're going to tap into our regional food bank. And now the food bank is going to deliver food directly to that patient, directly to that family, as per the prescriptions of that physician or that social worker, for instance. So, yeah, so that's what we're doing. Yes, yeah. And again, it is because we know it's not just about our medications or the clinical care within our four walls. It has to go beyond that. So those are just some of the few things that we're doing at UCLA Health that I'm incredibly excited about as well.
Yeah, as the center of gravity is moving from hospital to home. So you're tailoring programs that patients are at their center and how they can.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, a lot of what you touched upon was just more and more data to give you a view of the 360-degree view of the patient, not just their health condition, but access to food, transportation, all those social determinants of health. And big data has been, it's been the buzz for a long time. Now we're shifting into this era of AI. How do you think that's going to help what you do on a day-to-day basis? Because I know healthcare kicks off the most data of any industry, and there a lot of people are drowning in that data. And I think AI of any industry will have the most profound effects with certain, you know, guardrails in place. But I'd love to hear your perspective because that is right in your world. So,
well, I'm happy to jump in about that. You know, whether we're talking about machine learning or deep learning or whatever it may be, there are so many potential benefits of artificial intelligence, and especially in healthcare, whether we're focused on the administrative aspects of helping to automate and streamline and become more efficient, or we're thinking about various different decision support structures, predictive analytics. But there's also a large amount of caution that we have to proceed with, because as we know, artificial intelligence, as you were just mentioning, it's based off of data that we create. And if our data is biased in any way, whether it's due to underrepresentation of certain populations, whether it's due to the fact that it was collected in a biased way, or it's being interpreted in a biased way, all we're doing with AI is we're going to just replicate it 300 times over, 1,000 times over, and really perpetuate the health inequities that we already have. And so that's why, you know, it's time to take a step back and be very, very intentional and strategic with AI. And, you know, even from the Office of the National Coordinator and the FDA, that's one of the reasons why they're going into the spaces that they're going to. For instance, with ONC, through HTI-1, it was really put out like, let's at least be highly transparent with what these AI models are really being built upon, so that those of us as physicians or others within healthcare, we can say, okay, this AI tool was built on this population for this reason, and does that apply to my patient population, right? Because we haven't had that level of transparency. But then even in terms of FDA, thinking about, okay, but is this safe when we're actually creating these AI models? And then the other main entity is the Office of the Civil Rights. Because the Office of the Civil Rights said, no matter what tool you use in healthcare, if it's discriminatory in nature, you will be held accountable, not the vendors. Mm-hmm. You, as a provider, will be held accountable. So this is the time that we, and what I always really encourage and stress, that A, you have to analyze your data. What is the source of your data? How has it been used historically? Is that the correct way? Is it rooted in evidence or not? And then once you start replicating those models, do check-ins and say, is it actually performing as designed and in all the various different populations, especially vulnerable populations? And when I say vulnerable, yes, we're talking about various different underrepresented racial, ethnic, socioeconomic groups, but I'm also talking about those with rare diseases, those that have various different ability sets, whatever that is, so that we're not harming while we're trying to improve the population. And then after it's fully out there in the world, there needs to be check-ins then too. But when it's really being replicated amongst millions and millions of people, and which is like, is this acting as we designed it to act? And if it's not, we have to definitely pull it back, reevaluate it, iterate on it, or maybe even sunset it, depending on the situation.
I mean, one of the things that I think is true, and you can see it here at this meeting and almost every other meeting that I've been to where there's a lot of health technology, is that, you know, this is becoming a global phenomenon. You know, there are activities that are happening in either the AI space or in algorithm development or, device-related innovation that is worldwide activity. And the pandemic showed us things are global anyway. And so the advantages, I think, of having a global ecosystem for innovation is that it allows you to test and validate across different sort of environments. Not only do we want to make sure that whatever we're innovating at UCLA is applicable to the broader LA County population, which is very diverse, but we want to be in a position where if there's an innovation that's developed in Korea, and we have like a collaboration right now with, you know, an academic entity in Korea, that they can validate against our data, or we can validate against their data. And the more you're able to validate that these models work over very different healthcare environments, the more faith that you can have that you have something that might be broadly generalizable. And I really do think it takes a global effort to work on these projects together in a sort of collaborative way, because a lot of the people that live in LA County are immigrant populations that are coming from these countries anyway.
Absolutely. And so, yeah,
you know, I do really think that there's a lot of opportunity there to explore.
So, in terms of Bob, I know we're early in this conference, but anything has it stood out? You kind of touched on a few things so far, the kind of global feel. I know we've got, there's a big focus on nursing here as well, which I'm happy to see that. Anything stand out so far?
You know, for me, I think it's two areas, interoperability still, because we still have a ways to go with interoperability. And once, this is going back to Arash's point, once we can truly be interoperable in terms of our various different, not only electronic health record systems, but all of our health technologies, it's going to give us so much more power in order to develop new systems, new models to improve the health of people worldwide. And then, of course, AI. Like, everything is AI at this conference as well.
But I'm actually a hologram.
I can tell. Definitely can tell. But, you know, we have waves, right? And so it's not surprising that AI is at the top of the list in terms of what's being discussed at this conference this year.
Yeah.
and the populations of focus. Like, you know, more and more I see, you know, companies that are focused specifically on the aging population, or companies that are focused on caregivers, as well as the patients that are involved, or how to really kind of put the control of the healthcare back in the hands of the consumer. And I think those are trends that if we continue to invest in over time, will add to the technical interoperability and other innovations that are happening. Because I do think to transform our healthcare, different models are going to have to be developed that engage the patient, the caregiver, in ways that we haven't been thinking about in the past. And I think that's the exciting part of where we are.
Wonderful. Dr. Briggs, Dr. Nayem, speaking to folks like you really gives me hope that we can change the system for the better for all of us. And thank you now for joining us.
Sure.
And thanks for listening. If you want to access any of our content, please go wherever you access your podcast, or Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and you can find us on Healthcare On Air by Verizon.com. Until next time.
Thank you.
Take care.